Technorama episode 365. 365. Where have I heard that number before? For January 23rd, 2013, Man versus Mike.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Low fat, gluten free, lactose. Excuse me, where can I find a homemade podcast made with real geeks?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here are your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for Date.
Apparently, I forgot to modify the show notes there.
For insert date here.
January 23rd, 2013. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. We appreciate you giving us your time. I am Chuck Tomasi, revved up and ready to go. And with me at the starting line is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm good, man. I got my engine running.
Got my motor running. Da-da-da-da-da-da. It kind of sounds like that music in the background, doesn't it? Head out on the highway.
Yes, it does.
Looking for a podcast.
Looking for adventure. There's none here.
We hoping that they'll hit play. Come on, make it rhyme with me. Work with me here. Yeah. Haven't you ever done improv?
No.
Neither have I.
Yeah. Actually, wait a minute. Our whole show podcast has been improv.
Yeah, pretty much. I was thinking about that today. None of this is scripted. We just have a few dots and dashes to help us keep on track.
You know what? That much is scripted.
Right.
That's it.
That beginning that I just said, even some of that was improv. You'd never know, would you?
No.
Coming up in this episode, we have research results from MMORPGs versus AT&T DDoS. We take you behind the scenes of your favorite movie, and a message from 20 years ago still holds true. None of that and more coming right up.
Here's the kicker. We don't want this technology to be available to every hobbyist. That's enough. That's quite enough, Otto. Oh, he's messed with it. He must be the expert. So show us your editor.
Marty, we need to go back in time. 1.21 gigawatts.
Hey, I smell another intro, but here's the quote that really got me. Lipsum Aporum or whatever that is. 1.5.0.1. I don't know what's wrong with my voice. I can't work like this. I'm out of here.
Now we're in trouble.
What kind of garbage is that?
Hi, this is Grant Imahara from Mythbusters. And Myth Confirmed, you're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Hey, every week we want to remind you that we get together in the chat room and do the show live on Sunday night at 8:30 Eastern Time. In fact, we've made a brand new shiny, jolly, candy-like button for you to click on that says "Watch now." So if you can't find it,
what flavor is it?
Huh?
What flavor? What flavor is it? You say candy-like.
It's candy-like. It's like imitation Naga hide.
Ah,
it's not real candy. Don't lick your screen. We've been accused of that before.
You can link the website if you'd like.
Join us there at 9:30 Eastern every Sunday night, or as many as we can fit in until work interferes, and then we get on with our regular lives.
By the way, yes. Public service announcement. Don't lick monitors in public computers.
I'm not going to say anything about the taste difference between LCDs and CRTs, but I'll just leave it at your imagination that something happened that I can tell the difference.
Sure.
And don't lick your screen door either. They don't taste very good. Nasty.
Yeah, that's right.
Looking at our Technorama birthday calendar, you know, I have to admit I did kind of mess up the date on the last show. I don't know what was going through my mind. It should have been for January 16th, but at the last minute, my brain switched gears and became January 19th. So some of these birthdays may sound familiar from last episode if you listen to that. Happy birthday on January 23rd to Kathy Luke in Illinois, Chris Moody from Pod Media Chat, and Craig Stepp on the 25th.
Yay.
Yay.
Again.
Now we get into new territory. January 26th, Will the Computer Guy. And Mark in Memphis, we haven't heard from either of those two frequent phone callers. In many a moons, Mark is on the 27th. So we got 23, 23, 25, 26, 27 all lined up, bingity bang. Happy birthday bingity to bang. All you people. And if it happens to be your birthday and you're not on the Technorama calendar, go over to chuckchat.com/wiki, put your name on there, we'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. That's what we do, because we're that kind of podcast.
We're awesome.
And modest, apparently.
Yeah.
On this day in history for January 23rd, 2013, this is the 23rd day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 342 days remaining in 2013. It was on this date in 1656 that Blaise Pascal publishes the first of his Lettres Provinciales, I think.
And also on this date in 1849, Elizabeth Blackwell is awarded her M.D., by the Geneva Medical College of Geneva, New York, becoming the United States' first female doctor.
It was on January 23rd, 1855, the first bridge over the Mississippi opens in what is now Minneapolis, Minnesota, a crossing made today by the Father Lewis Hennepin Bridge.
And 104 years ago today, the RMS Republic, a passenger ship of the White Star Line, becomes the first ship to use the CQD distress signal. After colliding with another ship, the USS Florida, now this doesn't sound good, off Massachusetts coastline, an event that killed six people, the Republic sinks the next day.
Today in 1957, American inventor Walter Frederick Morrison sells the rights to his flying disc to the Whammo Toy Company, who later rename it, of course, the Frisbee.
Hey, wait a minute. Wasn't that a pie thing? I saw it in Back to the Future.
Yeah,
it must be
yeah,
true.
And yeah. We can all trust that documentary.
That's right. And documentary. And 53 years ago today, the what?
Bath Escape. Oh, USS Bath Escape. Trieste.
Okay, 53 years ago, the Bath Escape USS Trieste breaks a depth record by descending to 2,911 meters
Try 10,000.
In the Pacific Ocean. What'd I say?
2,000?
10. No, I said 10. 10 then.
Final communication between Earth and Pioneer 10 was exactly 10 years ago today.
You never call anymore. It's been 10 years since you phoned home.
Okay, Mom, I'm sorry.
Happy birthday goes out of this date to English mathematician John Landon, born on this date in 1719.
And also born on this date in 1745, English canal engineer William Jessup.
German physicist Ernst Abba was born today in 1840.
And January 23rd, 1855 marks the birth of American inventor John Moses Browning.
I'm not sure. I got to do a little research, but I think he came up with the Browning camera. Could be wrong. No. Buck Rogers, or rather the actor who portrayed him on the TV series, Gil Gerard turned 70.
Yay. And finally, MacGyver, the Colonel Jack O'Neill, and actor Richard Dean Anderson.
All
turned
three
63.
Of them, apparently. And yeah. That's the way it was on this day in history for January 23rd, 2013. Play out that music. Cha-cha-cha.
Cha-cha-cha.
The kids always do that in Sunday school. They put cha-cha-cha and stuff.
Especially, we had one kid. Every time somebody would sing happy birthday, they'd always do the cha-cha-cha on every
that's
line.
That's exactly where they
I'm
put
like,
it.
Oh, come on.
Cha-cha-cha again.
Yeah.
Bad news, everyone.
Hey, actually, this is pretty good news if you're into astronomy-type stuff. A comet, one of those once-in-a-century-type comets, is coming our way, and I really hope this is true if what they say is true. Last year, astronomers using the Russian International Scientific Optical Network, or ISON, that's just easier to say, spied something intriguing just beyond the orbit of Jupiter. A cometary body so large, how large was it? And with a trajectory that will bring it so close to the sun, how close was it? That it could potentially be visible from the Earth in the middle of the day. Not unlike Comet McNaught, pictured above, which was in 2007, and outshine the moon at night. The comet, which goes somewhat uncreatively by the moniker ISON.
Yeah. Was that something Apple invented, I'm sure.
Jarell, ISON. is expected to make its flyby toward the end of the year, as NASA Tony Phillips explains. Hey, I've heard of Tony Phillips. Comet Ison is a sun grazer. It only chews on the sun, apparently, out in the meadows. On November 28, 2013, it will fly through the sun's outer atmosphere only 1.2 million kilometers from the stellar surface below. If the comet survives the encounter, it could, key phrase there, emerge glowing as brightly as the moon. Or it'll go back in time and save the whales. Visibly near the sun in the blue daylight sky. How cool would that be to see a comet in the daylight?
I know. When I read this, I kept thinking, well, that would be awesome to see something other than the moon or the sun up in the sky like that.
Now, I remember Hale Bopp when that came around. You could see that kind of all the time because of where it was over the northern hemisphere.
Yeah, I do remember that.
That was neat. It was hard to take pictures, and I'm going to try really hard to take pictures when this thing comes around in November. November 28th is when it goes by the sun, and if it comes out, it'll be really bright. And the comet's dusty tail stretching into the night would create a worldwide sensation.
Yeah, I bet I can just see it now, like religious cults, you know, start flipping out.
Hey.
Because
Yeah, another spaceship hiding behind this one, I'll bet.
Yeah, they're sneaky like that.
We were off by one comet.
Yeah, oopsie.
It wasn't Hale Bopp, it was Ison.
When was that Hale Bopp? That was like
97.
97, yeah.
Yeah. 97, 98, something like that.
I was going to say 98, but you might be right.
It was before I went to digital photography, I know that.
Oh, God. Well, actually, I went digital in 2000.
Yeah, that's about when I did, too.
Mm-hmm.
And those first pictures, ooh, they're spectacular, aren't they?
Those pixels were expensive back then.
Actually, before I had digital photography, I would take my video and play it back through the Macintosh and had a video capture card so I could get still frames off of that.
Wow. But
they were like little pictures, 640 by 480 tops.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, well, we found out that Stephen Hawking is ready for an upgrade. Intel is trying to help Stephen Hawking get his speech back up to speed.
Yeah, so next time he's on Big Bang Theory, he can like run through the lines a little quicker.
Actually, it's more to do with how... we'll go with this. Stephen Hawking is a survivor, no doubt about that. He's been valiantly holding his own against ALS disease for 50 years now.
Yes,
but it's still taking its toll. The cheek-twitching mechanism he's been using to talk for the past 10 years isn't quite as efficient as it used to be. He's down to one word per minute at times, but Intel's CTO is working hard on a fix. While Hawking's communication system has been reliant on voluntary cheek-twitching input alone, Intel's CTO Justin Ratner noted at CES that Hawking has a few other reliable motions that could be used for communications as well. And if one of them could be utilized, Hawking could at least use Morse code, which would be an improvement over what he's doing now. Intel has been helping Hawking out of his jam since the 90s, so his Pentium 75 megahertz is ready for an upgrade. But now it's time for an upgrade. Up till now, these technologies didn't work well enough to satisfy someone like Stephen, who wants to produce a lot of information. You think? He's got a lot of stuff in his head.
Well, he's got a lot... I don't mean to disrespect him, but he's got a lot of time to think.
He's one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Ratner says. We've built a new character-driven interface in modern terms that includes a better word predictor. I hope it's better than the one on my iPhone.
Yeah, so you need to upgrade to Android.
I've seen some of those as well.
Yeah, no, they're not perfect. None of them are.
Damn you, StephenHawkingAutocomplete.com. I'm registering it now.
I know. I think I tried to text Kim and said something about, she was like, why are you doubting what? I was like, I looked back at my text and said, I wish you doubt or something like that.
So, I had one of those with Lisa. It was like, instead of typing hot, or it came out as not like three times, like, damn it. Hot. Ah! Yeah.
I like that website. Damn you, autocorrect.
That's a fun one. That's why I said, damn you, StephenHawkingAutocorrect.com. Go register it now.
I was going to say, and then the comet doubt you. What?
The plan to improve Hawking's communication ability lines up with Intel's plans to develop, quote, pervasive assistance, unquote, technology at large. This kind of tech requires a slew of new hardware, including cameras, accelerometers, microphones, thermostats that will be used to suss out the context of any given situation to give Hawking or anybody help speaking, as well as checking calendars, browse the web, surfing porn, and using social networks based on meter readings and general habits.
I wonder if there's, surely there's some information on, maybe the article at Scientific American has a little more detail, but I was curious what his upgrade path has looked like in the past. What has he been relying on? I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'm curious how far it has come from since the 90s to now. I know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at least for him, I'm familiar, of course, with the hardware changes we've had since then.
I wonder if somebody's hacked his system once and, like, did they do an upgrade and accidentally slip in the female voice?
Or his system just reboots for no reason by accident.
Blue screen of death.
Yeah. Well, they just give him a cell phone, I mean, a smartphone, and just tap it out.
Because he can't tap. He's doing all this just by what he can move.
Using his cheek. Yeah, tap on his cheek. Not on his finger. I know.
No.
Anyway, yeah. I'm curious.
Oh, yeah. It would be interesting to see what technology is behind that stuff and how often he gets the upgrades and how those are handled. Patches to the system. Yeah. You know, they're not rolling these things out with, Microsoft SCCM or something.
Yeah. Oh, great. Here comes Clippy.
I see you're composing a thesis. Can I help you with that?
You must be having trouble typing. Let me help you. What kind of? Wait a minute. What operating system is he using?
My guess is it's custom written.
It's probably. It may have some kind of version
of
Linux.
I'll bet it's like some embedded Linux or something that they've built on top of.
Yeah, that would be reliable enough for something like his communication.
Yeah, it's not life support after all.
Well, for him it is. Otherwise,
hacks and strange stories.
You cut me off, man.
Sorry, I had my finger hovering over the icon, and then I hit.
No, seriously. I bet it is a form of life support.
No, it's just communications.
No, just think of what he would be like if he couldn't communicate.
Well, you know what?
I guess figuratively, I'm saying.
Right, he's not going to die if his thing needs to be reboot, though.
Wouldn't he? I mean,
eventually, yes.
Get tired of boredom. I mean, you know, come on.
Someone's got to. Anyway, so we talked about the decimal system and the metric system and whatnot a week or so ago, right?
Yeah, right.
Well, according to this, some people believe that we should be switching not to a base 10 system for everything, but base 12.
12, okay.
Humans, for the most part, count in chunks of 10, and that's the foundation of the decimal system. Despite its near universal adoption, it's completely arbitrary numbering system that emerged on one very simple reason. Do you know why we count in tens?
Not off the top of my head.
We have 10 digits.
You have 10 reasons?
Right. We have 5 fingers on each hand. But as mathematicians like to point out, base 10 is not without its problems. The number 12, they argue, and I would say the number 16 is better, but is where it's really at. Here's why we should have adopted base 12 counting system and how we could still make it work.
Indeed, make your case, Chuck.
It's regrettable that we failed to evolve an ideal set of fingers to help us come up with a numbering system suitable for counting and calculating. Instead, with our 10 fingers, we are stuck with a clunky decimal system. Taking a close look at base 10, we can see how frustratingly limited it really is. 10 has a paltry 2 factors, a divisor that produces whole numbers, namely 5 and 2. Moreover, these numbers are not very useful in and of themselves. 5 is a prime number that cannot divide any further, and 2 is frustratingly small integer to work with. I kind of see where they're going with this. I've thought about 12 in the same way. 12 you can divide by 2, 3, 4, 6. Yeah, get it?
Okay, I'm with you.
Okay. It's not 10-ness that allows of this property. More accurately, it's a characteristic that belongs to all bases, a property of the place value notation we use to express numbers along with the symbol for 0. Ooh, look, cuneiform. Interestingly, base 10 is not universal across human societies. The Mayans were known to use a base 20 system, and the Babylonians developed a system they use sets of 60. That's a lot of symbols.
It is.
Oh my gosh. They do have them on there. That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. I saw that. Yeah.
Base 8 and base 16, the hexadecimal system, have also been used mostly for computational reasons. Quarters and eighths are simplified. I like base 16. And I had a college professor who liked base 8 even better. Yeah, that's a lot of cuneiform. But these are these alternative sets are still not ideal for day-to-day human applications. Base 20 is not great for finger counting, because you got to take off your shoes, probably. Many of us wear shoes when we're doing math. Oh, except in California, where you can wear flip-flops. Nor can we move our toes with any kind of dexterity. Base 8 is simply too small, and base 16 and base 60 are too unwieldy. I disagree about base 16. I'm in that camp.
You're luckily, in that camp?
There's a base that sits between these. Area 51?
Yeah.
A numbering
system
that has a plethora of characteristics that simply make it the best choice for counting and calculating. Introducing the dozenal system.
The dozenal. Oh, boy.
Duodecimal.
These are mathematicians, system. Not marketing experts.
What would you call a base 12 system?
What I call a base 12 system? That's a good question. Let me think about that for a minute.
I think dozenal is quite appropriate. Oh, a dozen? Well, 12?
The donut system.
What do you do for a baker's dozen when you have 13?
Then you're screwed. Then you're screwed. You eat one.
Hey, it would make a lot more sense, wouldn't it? We don't do base 10 time.
You eat the remainder.
So the extra symbols they put in here, obviously 10 would be at the top, right? Because that's one of the holes and mm-hmm. zero remainders.
I'll put it back up again.
Yeah, put up that little clock symbol. That's kind of cool.
The clock symbol?
The clock. Oh. Scroll down a little further. They got a clock. It goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And then there's an upside down 2 and then an upside down 3. Which, I don't know. I kind of like the AB. You know, throw it. That's kind of small on the screen. Can you pop that a little larger?
I am. Just a second. There you go.
But see, time would make sense. Of course, time is just something we've imparted on society. And in that case, base 24 would make more sense.
Wait a minute. Why are those threes backwards?
It's not backwards. Upside down. That's their base. If you converted dozenal to decimal, it would be 11. Craig, you know hexadecimal, right?
No, I'm just trying to figure out. Look, no.
That would be A and B in hex.
No, the threes are backwards.
Where?
Right here under that first clock.
Right, because they're pointing the little hand at the upside down three.
Oh, I gotcha.
Okay. They're telling you what time it is on that special new dozenal clock.
Well, see, this is stupid. I'm confused already.
No, well, would it be any different if they had made up a couple new symbols? Throw in some Greek?
What's wrong with the system we got?
What's wrong with the imperial system?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
No, let's go metric. Everything's 10. 10 is good.
Well, okay, I do have a question, though. You know, they said that we like the base 10 because we have 10 digits, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I used to have a neighbor and they had a baby that had 11 digits. What happens then?
Polydactyl is the term for that. See, listener, if you're not careful, you might learn something.
Yeah, and
although
maybe
I suspect
not.
A number of you are smart enough to know that the term polydactyl was already there.
Yeah, and the lesson you're learning is not to listen to the show again.
And if you find something where you think is complete and utter BS, let us know. Call the listener line.
Call the listener line at 206-222-CHAT.
Or you can always send an email.
Send your comments to technorama@chuckchat.com.
Because we haven't used those clips in a long time.
I love it when she says that. Technorama.
I'll have her redo those, all right?
Sure, whatever.
All right, I have this plan when I die. We're switching topics. We're off the dozenal system.
Okay.
When I die, I'm going to be an organ donor. Are you?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So The organs will go to somebody who gets harvested. The rest of my body can go to science. They can carve it up and, you know, learn medicine or whatever's left.
Yeah, because what do you care?
Right. I'm already dead. And let somebody learn from my mistakes, whatever those happen to be.
Whoa. Then, this guy has a large... No, I'm just kidding.
Whatever comes back can be burned. Right? So okay. We now have an urn that lets you rise from your own ashes as a tree. So for $225, the spirit tree is an urn that has a tree seed in it, and you put the dead person's ashes in it, and up comes a tree in a little while.
Is this like when people bury a placenta with a tree?
No, I haven't heard that one yet.
Really?
Yeah.
You haven't heard that?
I haven't heard that one yet.
There are people that save the placenta after their birth, and after a baby's birth, and plant a tree on it, so it kind of fertilizes the tree.
Oh, well, that makes sense. That would be good fertilizer.
Yeah, but I was like, no, I don't want that.
But I don't know why you have to buy this $225 tree. Why couldn't you just go to the nursery and get like a $50 one?
Just get a tree, put it in there, and plant your own ashes around it.
Right. What kind of tree would you grow if you could choose the tree that what you wanted to grow from your ashes? What would you grow?
An oak.
I was going to say for you, it's probably some kind of nut.
A nut. Yeah.
Or fruit.
Pecan tree. I don't know. Banana.
I would get something that continues to bear fruit, like an apple.
A coconut.
And that has nothing to do with my alignment with technology. I would grow an apple tree.
Whatever.
You're just mad because you can't grow Android trees.
I know. Your Androids don't grow, they're made.
Yeah, that's just sick. Thank you, dystopian society. Yeah. Speaking of technology, let's get back to the technology side. We've seen USB drives inserted into almost everything, but this one's a new one on me. This is the USB drive in a shovel. Hey, why?
Really?
Yes.
You know, there's,
dude, show the picture a little further downwards inserted into the computer.
I know that I've had hackers and, you know, people that DIY kind of people, and they're like, hey, if you have to ask why, you'll never get it. I'm going to ask why.
You're working on the farm. You just planted the corn. You're checking up on your Excel docs. How do you do it all? Easy. Just pop a USB drive in the end of your trusty shovel. Genius multitasking. Computer. That's right. You got to show the picture. Show the picture. That's a little further down. The one that not the one of the USB on the end. The one where it's actually stuck into the computer.
Yeah, give me 1 second here.
Originally made by a guy in Russia, this giant drive is also completely unnecessary. It's not something you can buy. That's the one. This dude seems to have it made for the sake of art, just because. Stick the heavy shovel drive into your computer, and you just launched your laptop across the across the field. I think it's a great idea. Where else are they going to think to look for those secret documents?
Again, I'm all for, you know, hacks. You want to turn something into something that it was not intended to be. Go for it.
Right.
But this is just weird.
It stirs the imagination into where else you could put a USB drive.
It kind of limits your options in carrying this thing around.
My office is only 4 feet wide. I can't put a 6-foot spade in there.
Yeah, this thing's a little prohibitive when I'm using my thumb drive.
Hey, Craig, why do you have a shovel? It's not a shovel. It's my storage. It's my backup documents. All right, we're going to take a real quick break and be right back with the Media Corner, where we will be covering, some stuff from Star Trek The Original Series, Spider-Man, a little bit about Stan Lee. He's the man. Stan the man. All that and more coming up right after this.
Yeah, release the attorneys.
Yeah, we'll write for that.
In the future, and even now, they're going to be faster.
Mulder and the cigarette smoking man are hanging out on the beach just chilling.
Those little Speedos.
So.
No.
You want that image?
No. Yeah.
Mulder driving the boat.
Smoking man in his Speedos.
then, if that's everyone's favorite.
I'm thinking of the Fonz jumping over the shark.
Ah, we love the show. I'm glad you're enjoying it. We'll never show that again.
This is David Levy, amateur astronomer, lover of the night sky, and comet discoverer. You are listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
In the media corner, we have a rare interview excerpt from the original Star Trek captain before Picard, before Kirk. It was Captain Christopher Pike in the original Star Trek pilot. The cage. No.
Well, the menagerie.
Menagerie, yes, thank you. They made the cage out of the menagerie. Sorry, crossed wires for a second.
Hey, menagerie, cage,
yeah, zoo.
Yeah, zoo.
There are almost no interviews out there with Jeffrey Hunter, who played Captain Christopher Pike in the original Star Trek pilot, since he was replaced by William Shatner, of course, and then died in 1969 before the show really became a cult phenomenon. But TrekWeb has dug up a 1965 interview, which Hunter did with a Hollywood columnist. That was a quote. It sounds real reliable, doesn't it?
Yes,
which
it does.
Which was picked up by Starlog magazine later, in which Hunter shows off a lot of enthusiasm for Trek, as well as some thoughts about how the show might unfold. So he wasn't real clear on what the show was about. This is from the interview. We run into prehistoric worlds, contemporary societies, and civilizations far more developed than our own. It's a great format because writers have a free hand. They can have us land on a monster-infested planet, or deal in human relations involving the large number of people who live in this gigantic ship. The thing that intrigues me the most is that it is actually based on the Rand Corporation's project of things to come. Except for the fictional characters, it will be like getting a look into the future, and some of the predictions will surely come true in our lifetime. Well, we got
he got that right.
With all the weird surroundings of outer space, the basic underlying theme of the show is a philosophical approach to man's relationship to woman. Say what? Hey. There are both sexes in the crew, and in fact, the first officer is a woman.
Well, and when the Klingons were introduced, it got really weird.
Given how much Hunter's pilot, The Cage, dealt with Captain Pike's need as a man and his relationships with the female crew members, you can see why he might think it was about a major theme of the show. That and the short skirts. But Kirk's romances with various alien women notwithstanding, you'd be hard-pressed to argue that gender relations were, quote, the basic underlying theme, unquote, of the show as a whole. And, of course, the show replaced number one, Major Barrett, as Kirk's first officer, giving Spock, a major promotion.
Yeah, and they started exploring alternative relationships.
Excuse me?
Actually, when I was reading this, I kept thinking that, Pike was a very, Jeffrey Hunter, thank you. Jeffrey Hunter was a very literal person, and he really took that wagon train to the stars literally. You know,
please yes. don't. When you
wagon
said
train
alternative,
to the stars,
when you said alternative lifestyles, the only thing that came to mind is when they left Bailey with Baylock. Please, no.
Oh, I love that thing you did a while back, the Wrath of Bailey.
I gotta drink one more Tranya. You have to slip that in the show somewhere.
I think so.
Mr. Editor.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, there was a man at a children's hospital who was dressed as he does the window washing. And to cheer up the kids, he dressed up as Spider-Man. So as he's swinging around on a scaffolding washing the windows, all the kids were enthused to see him. Although he looks like he's more of an inflatable Spider-Man. In heartwarming news, the window washers at Le Bonheur Children's Hospital in Memphis, I hope I said that right, in Memphis, Tennessee, dressed as Superman and Captain America to surprise the sick children while they worked on the sides of the building. Then they came in for a meet and greet, and all the kids had a great time, and they were able to forget their illnesses for a little bit, and maybe the world isn't a terrible place as we might make it sound out to be. So there's
I like the Captain America. He looks like he's put on a couple of pounds.
And went bald.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
It is a fantastic idea. I'm sorry. I almost hate to make fun of this at all, or light of it at all, because it is a good idea.
Absolutely. You know, I think children's hospitals all over the place ought to do this stuff.
Yeah. What, you know,
all the washers ought to do this. That'd be great, because they wash like corporate buildings too.
I would, you know, every once in a while I see the ropes hanging down in front of my window at work, and I'm like, great, here comes the window washers, and they come sliding down. I'd love to see like Iron Man.
Iron Man doesn't climb around the sides of buildings. Spidey does.
Yeah, well, they can mix it up. Hey, you know, it's Marvel. They can do whatever they want.
Comes along and breaks all the windows. Windows clean!
Yeah.
You miss spot!
Stop touching window!
But the real superhero this week has to be Stan Lee. Last week, Bo Cleveland got critically injured, in a school shooting at Taft Union High School in Central California. The 16-year-old kid was then put in a medically induced coma following surgery, and now the hospital staff are slowly bringing him back awake. Since Bo is a huge Spider-Man fan, see how those two tie together? We do that sometimes.
Yeah.
His friends have started wearing Spidey shirts at school as a way to show their support, and somehow Stan Lee heard of the story. He then sent Bo a Get Well video, which is available on YouTube, linked through our show notes,
mm-hmm.
which you can hear above. It's like a minute and a half, and there's no need for superheroes when Stan the Man is on the job.
No, he's super enough.
What a cool thing to do. I mean, almost makes, shouldn't say this in jet, but almost makes you want to get shot just to hear a message from Stan Lee to you.
No, you don't. No, we don't want to know.
Can I fake a Make-A-Wish Foundation thing?
Yeah. Yeah, my friend Chuck is mentally ill. Just listen to the last 7 years.
Stan, can you record a message for me?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, Chuck, this is Stan Lee on the job, hoping you get better. And, well, stop podcasting, kids. It'll rot your brain.
Yeah. But, no, this is fantastic. I think he even signed some comic books and stuff in the video. I think he mentioned that and was going to send it to him.
We saw him at Dragon Con. Did you get any pictures other than the back of his head?
No, he was too busy talking to Lou Ferrigno. Yeah, Leo. What was I saying? Leo Ferrigno.
Leo Laporte. Ferrigno. Yeah. He's too busy talking to Leo Laporte.
Yeah, Leo Laporte. Leo DiCaprio. I don't know.
What?
No. Leonardo. He's a Ninja Turtle.
Leon Arnold is one of the kids used to call him.
Leon Arnold. Anyway.
All right.
What the chuck?
What's up with that?
Oh, you broke the window. You hear that?
Yeah. Did you broke the webcam.
Now we have to go back to Clinton and get more windows. Well, apparently, doctors don't follow their own advice on medical treatment. Everybody's aware of that.
You think?
It's been known that doctors tend to avoid their advice for patients when it comes to treating themselves, but it's pretty amazing just how big the differences really are. Radiolab dug up a decade-long survey made by Joseph Gallo of Johns Hopkins that showed what doctors really think. The scenarios that doctors were given was, quote, irreversible brain surgery without terminal illness, unquote. Taking a look at the survey, it's pretty clear that doctors don't want any type of treatment other than pain meds. And there is a chart that says, yes, I would want, no, I would not want, undecided, or trial, but stop if no clear improvement.
That's weird.
And the treatments are CPR, ventilation, dialysis, chemotherapy, surgery, invasive testing, feeding tube, blood, antibiotics, IV hydration, and pain medicine.
Well, wait a minute. Now, to ask somebody theoretically, what would you want without having to see if they'd actually go through with that? That's a little skewed, I think.
But how does that compare with non-doctor types?
I say most people follow their doctor's advice. I mean, I'm not saying everybody does, but I'm just saying I would say the majority, right, or more.
But what the doctors are advising aren't what they're actually doing.
Well, that's... That yeah. It says what doctors really think. It didn't say what they were doing. So what I'm saying is, to ask you a question, would you rather die in a fire or die by firing squad, you know, you can easily, or just rot in the desert, you know. What?
You don't feel very imaginative tonight, are you? Fire or firing squad?
There's a lot of fire in there, too. And then they'll take you the heat of the desert.
Fire.
So what I'm saying is, to ask them what they think, you know, this is what I would do.
Kind of. I have a doctor friend.
Huh?
I have a doctor friend.
Okay.
And he injured one of his quadriceps. And he followed treatment. He went to PT and whatnot. It took him a while because, you know, I think he was like all of us. It's like, oh, it'll get better on its own. It'll get better on its own. And it didn't start getting better on its own. Then he had to go.
What doctor is he?
he's a GP, a general practitioner.
Okay. I was just kidding, but yes. Okay.
Okay. So, you know, he takes care of himself. Yeah, I'd have to ask him what his colleague. I'll ask him what his colleagues think about this.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's one thing to say, would you go through CPR? Hell no. You know.
But if you were told you had terminal brain cancer, what would you do? Would you say, don't give me anything?
Well, then I have to see how far. I'd have to get some more information before I can make a decision.
This is irreversible brain injury without terminal illness. I thought it said something about terminal cancer, but irreversible brain injury.
If it was a good chance it was going to set me back right, sure, why not? I would.
Okay, see, and these doctors said, no, I wouldn't. Give me nothing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's kind of an empty question. I mean, to ask somebody without them actually having the...
But the point is that the answer that doctors are giving is different than what non-doctors are giving. And there was silence.
Speaking of brain injuries...
I think we just gave Craig Hurdy brain again. Let's go on to something cool you saw. You got a picture of a cool tattoo
that
had a couple of things. This guy's got a lot of ink on his arm. And I usually reserve... This is probably a good time to plug the Facebook page. I usually reserve the visual stuff for the Facebook page. But Craig threw this into Google Plus as well.
Yeah, now, this morning, I went to breakfast with Harrison and my parents. And this guy had tattoos. I said, you mind if I see your tats? And she said, sure. So he had an R2-D2 on his calf. But the really good one... that really caught my eye was the one on his shoulder and upper arm, which is at the top. It says Pluto, and I mean it's the planet Pluto.
Yeah,
and it says 1930 to 2006, which is, of course, when it stopped being a planet. I'm using air quotes there. So it was like an homage to that. And then here comes the Back to the Future DeLorean, kind of doing a flyby with with a meteor or whatever flying around. It's pretty cool. I'm not a big tat guy, but I can appreciate it. Nice art. I think this is pretty cool.
That's nice art. Yeah, I agree.
He was cool enough to let me take a picture of it.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Nice way to finish out. And we are done. Boy, did that go fast. Wow.
Yeah.
That went really fast.
Yeah, I know. Let's just talk. Let's just mumble for a little bit.
No, we're done. We're done. We're done. We're leaving.
Okay.
That takes us to the end of the show, and we appreciate your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. Call listener line, like my sister said, 206-222-CHAT, 206-222-2428. Email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff. The Facebook page, we gave it a vanity URL if you can't remember the other one or if you don't know how to click on it. We appreciate everybody this last week who has liked us on Facebook. Thank you very much. We appreciate you sharing that. The vanity URL is facebook.com/technoramapodcast. When I went to register facebook.com/technorama, it said not available. But yet when you try going there, it says not in use. So I don't know what kind of quasi-universe they live in. But
probably because that stupid science museum.
No, it would have taken me to their page, right?
No, I mean, probably because it's a trademark or something. Maybe they kind of reserve those. And
well, it dawned on me when I was trying to demo to somebody. They searched on Technorama on their mobile app. and it came up with like 8 hits, and you didn't know ours from a record label. So putting the podcast on there, I think, helps. So Technorama Podcast on Facebook.
It kind of goes to get us our marketing thing, but now not, I guess.
Right, right. We'll separate ourselves from the Linhof camera. And we're also on Google Plus. So all that good stuff, you know where to find us. Just go to the webpage. We added some new buttons on there, so that'll be fun. Makes it easy to
buttons.
Find.
Buttons are not toys.
Don't press the button. Don't press the button! Special thanks to Matt Barr for providing all the great blog content of the week. Everybody who sent us links, thank you. We've tried to incorporate as many as we could. And thank you for joining us on the Hangout. We had a couple of people that joined us in the chat while we were talking. Thanks, 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 thanks. And you for downloading and listening to this or watching it live on YouTube or watching it live on Sunday night, whatever you're doing. Thank you very much. This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. Also affiliated with all the great podcasts over at Farpoint Media. Go over to farpointmedia.com and check them out. Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama, and as always, a binary high five.
Huzzah! I mean, 101.
Jane, the man they call Jane. He robbed from the rich and he gave to the poor. Stood up to what for? A love for him now ain't hard to explain. The hero of Canton, the man they call Jane. Now Jane saw the mutter's backs breaking. He saw the mutter's lament. And he saw the magistrate taking every dollar and leaving 5 cents. So he said, you can't do that to my people. You can't crush them under your heel. Jane strapped on his hat, and in 5 seconds flat, sold everything Boss Higgins had to steal. He robbed from the rich, and he gave to the poor. Stood up to the man, and he gave him what for. Our love for him now ain't hard to explain. The hero of Canton, the man they call Jane. Now here's what separates heroes from common folk like you and I. The man they call Jane, he turned round his plane and let that money hit the sky. He dropped it into our houses. He dropped it into our yards. The man they call Jane, he stole away our pain and headed out for the stars. Jane, the man they call Jane. He robbed from the rich and he gave to the poor. Stood up to the man and he gave him what for. Our love for him now ain't hard to explain. The hero of Canton, the man they call Jane. The hero of Canton, the man they call Jane.